Committee will come to order. Members, take your seats, please. Representative Sikora, welcome to your committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, today we have House File 3580, which is essentially the governor's budget recommendations, and I would like to move that this bill be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, Representative Sikora, to your bill.
And there are four amendments. Would members from the department like to come up, please? But looking at the First Amendment, what order shall we take these in? The first one I have here would be A1. And A1 is everything that reflects the actions that were taken in the policy committee on Friday that regarded pieces that were in the governor's bill. So I would like to move Amendment A1.
Okay, Representative Sikora moves to add H3580A1 amendment to House File 3580.
Right.
We don't have a quorum.
We did a minute ago. All right, why don't we just go ahead with the bill and you can take these up.
Okay. Well, it's been established we did have a quorum present. So all in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Amendment is adopted.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The next one would be AMD 03. And that is within this bill there is a levy allowing for the high five, allowing the schools that use the high five program to levy for that, and it allows them to spread it over 3 years or so rather than paying it all at one time. Yeah. Beginning in 07. I would like to move Amendment 03.
See that? Representative Sikora, I'm looking for my amendment. Do we have that?
It was just handed out.
Oh.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, could we ask staff to provide appropriate page, line, and section numbers?
Mr. Chair, Representative Biskins, page 22, after line 10, insert section 25.
22, 10, and 25. Mr. Chairman.
Representative Biskins.
Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that be an oral amendment to Representative Sequin's amendment and ask that she consider incorporating that.
You meant Representative Sikora. Representative Sikora, will you accept that as an oral amendment to your amendment?
Sure. I will.
Okay, so moved. Okay, any other questions to the amendment? This is the TSAMD 03 amendment to House File 3580. Any questions or discussion? All in favor of the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Amendment's adopted. Representative Sikora.
All right. The next amendment, Mr. Chairman, is 1240, and I'm going to ask the department to explain that one because I really haven't had a chance to spend much time with it yet. And so maybe the commissioner would explain that one.
Commissioner Sigmund.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The 1240 amendment is, first of all, adding a grant process to the Minnesota Teacher Alternative Pathways process. That would be on page 7. If you look on page 7, line 35, the Teacher Training Program for Qualified Professionals. We're just adding some grant process to that particular program. And then if you look at the amendment on line 123, it just clarifies that the QCOMP or quality compensation money is for fiscal 2008 and later. And then on line 125, page 19, line 25, We're inserting, this is for the intensive immigration monies that would be helping to teach the Hmong refugees English. It also adds immigrants to give some flexibility in that particular program, to the ABE program. And then also on page 2 and going further through this amendment is just the high school redesign grant program that we talked about in policy, and it's just inserting the language, substituting this language for the language that was originally in the bill. Then, and then following the rest of that is still referring to the refugee and immigrant language that has to be put in there. And then also on line 510, we're deleting a district and deleting pilot project, and we're inserting grants, just to clarify that.
Okay, members, we're on the AO 61240 amendment. Representative Grattan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner Segrin, on page 2, line 2.7, I'm wondering why it says there, I noticed this in the committee last week, but I forgot to ask, and now I'm seeing it again. Why does it say in a high school when there's several grants?
You're looking at 2.7?
Okay. Mr. Chair,
2.7?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we could maybe clarify that, to say, because I know the language just talked about you could. Well, Ms. Larson, I think it, the grant program is to redesign a high school. So it's referring to that process of redesigning a high school. You can have consortiums of, you know, or groups of districts coming together to look at a redesign, you know, maybe creating even a regional high school concept. But it is focused on, you know, the redesign of a high school. Does that answer your question, Representative Greiling?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, so it's a high school, and then down in starting with 2.9, that's mm-hmm. where the plural comes in?
Well, it talks about who can do this, who can apply for a grant. So school districts could apply for a grant, charter schools could, intermediate districts, groups of districts that cooperate, and other public educational institutions would be eligible to participate in creating a new high school or redesigning a high school.
So, Mr. Chair.
I'm granted.
Commissioner, so really this whole section is only going to result in one pilot?
No. No.
Well, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, that's where my wondering about the language here comes in. Then,
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Segrin.
Mr. Chair, the appropriation is for $5 million, and school these different entities could apply to the department and submit a grant, an application to redesign their particular high school. They might look at creating a year-round high school. They might look at, and it's all around science, technology, engineering, and math. They may submit a proposal to upgrade their curriculum, do some professional development training, and you have a list of things that they can do as part of a framework of submitting an application. But it could be, and then they have to submit a budget. So you might have four or five small rural districts that submit four or five different applications with a budget. Maybe their budget is $250,000 to redesign their high school. You may have a large district coming in with a large high school. And so it's not limited to one high school. It could be five $1 million proposals. It could be 10 proposals of all different kinds of sizes, but it's not restricted to, it's just based on whoever submits their application and the cost of their particular proposal.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, I do share the same concern that Representative Greiling has, and it's in the wording of that first sentence, because both a 10-year grant program is written in the singular, as is in a high school, and it really does sound like it is one grant to one high school. I'm wondering, Commissioner, if I could offer a suggestion for you to ponder, would it not be more clarity to what you're trying to accomplish by on 2.7, strike the word "a" and insert "recipient," and then strike "school" and insert "schools." So then it would read "in recipient high schools." And then I think, Madam Commissioner, it just reads more to your intent.
Mr. Chair?
Commissioner Segrin.
Mr. Chair, that sounds like a friendly amendment to me. That would help with clarification.
Mm-hmm. Representative Biskins, could you repeat exactly where that is?
Mr. Chairman, I offer as an oral amendment on page 2, line 7. Strike the word "a," insert "recipient," strike the word "school," and insert "schools."
Now, this is on the AO6 1240 amendment, isn't that right?
This is on the 1240 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Okay, members, so we got an issue I've been trying to work on here. And when we did the A1 amendment, we did this high school redesign grants was in that amendment that we've already passed. Now in the 1240 amendment, we got the exact same thing happening again. We were going to strike that part since we already did it. I guess I want to ask counsel this. Is there a problem with us just going ahead with 1240 and adopting that over the top of the 81, A1? Well, the confusion is that we're now amending the 1240 part that we were going to take out because we already passed it. So if we amend the 1240 part we were going to take out that's duplicative with A1, isn't that okay? So we can just go ahead and amend it, adopt it.
Or this is going to take this one in lieu of?
In lieu of A1.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this would have to be over the top of A1.
Part of A1.
Right. Is that okay? We can just do that? Okay. I think we're clear. Are we waiting for clarifying language, Representative?
Mr. Chairman, I withdraw my amendment for the time being.
Thank you, Representative Biskins. Okay, I think as long as we're withdrawing Representative Biskins' amendment to AO6-1240, Representative Sikora, are you in tune with what's happened here?
Well, I think so.
Okay, on the A1 amendment, which we just adopted, on page 2, I'm sorry, on page 4, section 10 has the high school design grants.
To what we just did, in other words.
Right. We adopted that with the A1 amendment, Representative Sikora. And the current 1240 amendment that we're working on has that same section. So what I'm proposing, and I've been told that the section 23 of 1240 is the exact same thing as what we just adopted in the A1. What I'm suggesting is that we remove section 23 from the 1240 amendment.
Right.
So we'd be removing section 23, which is starting on 2.4, and would be all of page 3, all of page 4, and down to and including line 5.2. Okay. Mr. Strom assures me that I'm doing the right thing here with the part we're taking out. Commissioner Segrin.
Mr. Chair, there's also language, or should that stay in the 5.3 to 5.5? Should that stay in too, correct?
Council at this point thought we should keep that. I'll defer to their judgment.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
For now, Representative Sikora, will you incorporate my oral amendment to remove Section 23 up to and including line 5.2 on page 5?
That is correct.
So we'll be deleting that from the 1240 amendment.
I would so move that we delete that.
Everybody tracking with what we're doing here?
I'm sorry about that error.
That's okay. Are there any questions? Okay, so what we have is we have an oral amendment to House File, or the amendment, we have an oral amendment to the amendment number 1240. All those in favor of that oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, that's adopted. Now we got the 1240 amendment without Section 23. Representative Sikora.
I would so move the amended version of amendment number 1240.
Okay, Representative Sikora renews her motion to amend.
No, to pass House the amended version.
House File 3580 with the amended amendment.
Yep.
Any questions? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion is carried. The amendment is adopted. Now, back to your bill, Representative Sikora.
Thank heaven, Mr. Chairman. We are on the last amendment, number AO61288. And that amendment is simply a technical amendment. I think it's one-time dollars versus carryover dollars. But did you want Mr. Melcher to talk about that? I guess Mr. Melcher can address that. Is he here?
Yes.
There he is, Mr. Melcher. Welcome, Mr. Melcher. State your name for the record.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, or good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. With this amendment is cleaning up the appropriations section of the governor's proposal to clarify which programs are a 90-10 appropriation basis as opposed to a 100% current basis, and it's also clarifying which are one-time appropriations versus ongoing appropriations, consistent with the governor's budget message.
Thank you, Mr. Melcher. Any questions? This is on the AO61288 amendment, members. Seeing no questions, all those in favor of the 1288 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is carried. Amendment is adopted. Representative Sikora, to your amended House File 3580.
I would move them 12. Oh, you're talking about the bill now, or are you still on the amendment?
I'm sorry. We're on the bill now.
All right.
Mr. Chair and members, I want to, since a lot of this, excuse my voice again, since a lot of this language in House File 3580 has been covered in the policy committee, I want to first just go back to the back of the bill, if you will, and just cover the appropriation, since this, of course, is the Finance Committee. If you start on page 22, you will see the Waseca levy appropriation, and this is an allowance of an appropriation, a levy for Waseca. The Department of Education had done a miscalculation on their health and safety revenue, and so this is allowing Waseca to recover that appropriation due to a miscalculation. $316,000 of that will be a payment of aid to Waseca, and then they will also be allowed to levy an additional amount of money to cover their loss. Dr. Melcher can probably go into a little bit more of the detail of the aid levy thing, which he should probably do. The rest of the appropriations are in regard to some of the governor's proposals. The first one is the AP and IB increase student participation to grow some of the advanced placement and international baccalaureate programs. And the first year of the appropriation is $7.3 million, and then it grows in the next biennium. Then the on 22.19, the high school and slash district redesign pilot program. It's supposed to have a $5 million appropriation. And this is a 10-year grant program, so the appropriation would go out for 10 years. Then there's Teach for Minnesota and Alternative Teacher Training Program. That's $500,000 for the fiscal 07 and then continues in other years. The Intensive English Instruction for Refugees, again, this is the program that actually was brought forward last year in the biennial budget. This $1 million is for Hmong refugees that were displaced from refugee camps to come here to the United States and to help them with their English language learning. Yes, and we'll certainly, any of the language that anyone wants to ask questions about, we can certainly cover or respond to questions. On page 23, line 23.3, is the Chinese language proposal. This is to begin a process of creating some Chinese language programs, foreign language teaching, but also looking at cultural issues, too, with learning about the Chinese culture. And this is a $250,000 appropriation. Excuse me. Then the next one in Subdivision 7 is Early Childhood Part C, and Barbara O'Sullivan is here from our department. The federal government has...
Excuse me, we have a quick question. Representative Dabney, I assume it's to one of the parts you just went through?
Correct. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner. It occurred to me that currently, in looking at the Chinese language development, which is fine as far as it goes, but it occurred to me that, as I understand it, there's one high school in the state that teaches Arabic, no middle schools. And yet there's a screaming need from defense, intelligence, as well as the private sector for individuals who are not only competent in Arabic, but then also have some of that cross-cultural understanding that from the testimony and policy you folks are looking to help develop in Chinese. And I'm wondering if the department has considered expanding this program, particularly given that it's a small dollar amount, to respond to the needs of Arabic as well as Chinese.
Commissioner Seeger?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, we had that discussion, but as you said, because it's a smaller dollar amount, we kind of wanted to start with Mandarin Chinese and look at that first. I know that there are other needs in some of the other areas, and we did discuss that. It was hard for us to, we wanted to try to start growing something, and both of those languages actually have not very many teachers being able to teach those languages. And I think we chose the Chinese language because of the impact, the interaction that we're probably going to have in the future with the Chinese. The country of China, but certainly we could look at India and a number of other areas too. So we chose the Mandarin Chinese.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I understand all of that, although I would counter slightly that I imagine if you cut under the surface a little bit, given some of the immigration patterns we've seen, there's a large number of Arabic speakers, many of whom may be licensed teachers in other areas, who would be very quickly able to develop some expertise in teaching Arabic. And it might actually be an easier language to implement than the Mandarin Chinese in that respect. Thank you.
Going on to page 23, subdivision 7, the Early Childhood Part C, Barbara O'Sullivan, I said, is here from our department. The federal government, the special education federal component of our federal government, has indicated to states that the kind of the gateway for entering our Part C program, the 0 to 3 special education program, needed to be widened. In other words, children that would maybe exhibit developmental delay would also be eligible for Part C dollars. So because of that, we have analyzed how much additional money we may need to appropriate at the state level to satisfy this new federal requirement. And it's $1 million in the first year, and then there's continuing appropriations in years out. Also, I want to tell you, too, or assure you, that if we identify more students for these services. The federal government also appropriates money, and money is sent to us when we identify more students. Also, in the next one in Subdivision 8 is early childhood screening, and this is actually an appropriation that will adjust our screening appropriation last year. When the Department of Finance looked at our language last year, they said that we had not written it clearly enough to make sure that students that had entered kindergarten, five-year-olds that had not been screened, would also be eligible after the first 30 days that they enter kindergarten for screening if they had not been screened. They said we could not pay for that under the current language. So we clarify that in the bill, and then we also adjust our appropriations so that kids that maybe missed screening entered kindergarten can still be screened in the first 30 days of kindergarten. Then the Subdivision 9 is what we fondly refer to around here as the High Five Transition Revenue Program. That money is for districts that had been educating four-year-olds under the kindergarten, under a kindergarten program. And there, I think, are 14 or 17 districts that actually were doing this, and doing this with the approval of former administration of the Department of Education. And because of that, because of a fairness issue of maybe sending mixed messages about whether they could or couldn't do this, we're allowing them to have some transition revenue to continue these programs. And then that is basically it as far as the appropriations. If you wish that, we want to bring Dr. Melcher up to just explain the Waseca situation to you. But if you want us to start going through the actual language again, we'll be glad to do that. That's actually Representative Sikora's call on that.
Commissioner Segrin, before we hear from Dr. Melcher, I've got a couple quick questions. In Section 24, we have the $316,000 appropriated to cover the loss of aid to Waseca. We don't have a year designated here. Is that something we need to put in? So when that should be appropriated? Dr. Melcher?
Mr. Chairman, the 1288 amendment clarifies the year of the Waseca appropriation. It's appropriated in fiscal year 2007.
Okay, so that's covered. And also I had a question to Commissioner Segrin. In Subdivision 3 at line 22.19, you had mentioned that that's a 10-year. Is that also covered in one of the amendments? I didn't catch that. You mentioned it was a 10-year appropriation, and it says 07 here. And I there was a couple of places like that where you mentioned they were ongoing year to year. Are they in the amendments? And I just didn't see that.
The appropriation is for the 07 because this is the second year of the biennium that we're dealing with. But then the tail, there are tails to this, and it does indicate that this program is funded out in outline years.
Okay. Commissioner Segrin, could you tell us where that's at? Council's looking at this and trying to decide if everything's jiving up. Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman, the governor's budget document does show $5 million in each of the out years, and we would only be appropriating money in 07 because that's the end of the current biennium that we're in. But I think the documentation is there that suggests this program does have tails, and I think the language talking about a 10-year program is just another indication that it's an ongoing program, not one that's limited just to 07.
Okay, well, we'll move on while they're checking that. Is there a sunset at some point? Is there a date that it comes to an end? Does it specify? Or does it just specify these years and then it's done?
Mr. Chair, we don't sunset. And maybe that's something that, we need to consider. If it starts in 07 and goes, for 10 years, if it sunsets in in 2017, if that makes the committee more comfortable as far as tying up the loose ends of that.
Well, how about if we do this, Mr. Crow and Mr. Strom, Ms. Larson, maybe if you can look at that. If you have further issues, you can bring it to my attention. Otherwise, let's move forward. Hey, Dr. Melcher, I think you were next.
Mr. Chairman and members, the Waseca appropriation is on page 22, lines 5 through 10, and the department in administering the health and safety calculations for the Waseca district made an error that affected the aid and levy for the district in fiscal years 1997, 1998, and 1999 that was just recently discovered. The department does have authority in statute to make corrections if when we determine that there is an error that has been made, and the normal process is to take any aid adjustments out of the current year's appropriation. In the health and safety program, at the time that these errors were made, the $316,000 was a relatively small percentage of the overall appropriation. But because of growing property values in the state, the health and safety appropriation has shrunk down now to, I think, around $500,000 a year. So if we were to go into that appropriation and make a $316,000 correction for the Waseca district for the prior year errors, that would reduce the proration factor for the current year program to something less than 50% and would cause an undue burden on the other districts that are still receiving aid for the health and safety program. So rather than attempting to fund this out of the current appropriation, the governor's recommended that we provide an additional appropriation of $316,000 to make the Waseca district whole. And also, because this is such a large amount for the district, that rather than requiring them to levy all of that in 1 year in order to recoup that aid, to allow them a period of years to make the levy that goes with that that aid.
Okay, thank you. Representative Bernardi.
Mr. Melcher, I hear some words like make whole, error, recoup, those kinds of words, and you know the issue that I have with the school district I represent. I'm not going to let that go away. Was that an error, a glitch? What was that? Was it a policy that the governor truly did want to reduce classroom funding? What would you categorize that as?
Back to Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bernardi, I think the distinction here is this is simply a calculation error by the department. We had an error in our computer program that underpaid the district according to what the statute was. Now, in the case of the legislation dealing with the calculation of transition revenue, is a little different situation where the statute was clear in terms of what we should do, but some districts didn't do so well on that calculation, and that would require a specific law change if we were to go back and provide additional transition revenue to the districts that you represent and others that were affected by that. So it's a little different situation here. This is purely an administrative error by the department that resulted in an underpayment to the district as opposed to a specific legislative act.
I just want to, Mr. Chair, I just want to make a follow-up comment. You know, as I understand it, not even your department and you even understood that this happened to this group, and that could be a miscalculation also. So I still want to continue because our school district has 40% poverty, has 30% kids of color, has a lot of challenges, and the community is doing everything to support it, and yet lost out on about $80 or so, $70 per pupil in funding. And some school districts are now even below, as I understand, below their 2003 level of classroom funding because of this calculation.
Dr. Melcher.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bernardi, I understand that there were some difficult issues that resulted from that legislation, and I know that you've had bills proposed in the past to try to address that. Those were not included this year in the governor's budget proposals, but I'm sure that we can continue to look at that. I'm not in a position to make promises from an administration perspective in terms of trying to correct that issue. And I don't know if the commissioner would like to comment on
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner.
As Dr. Melcher said, we did not put that in our appropriation this year. That's all I can comment to you.
And just one more question, just to refresh my memory on this. With the law that has happened so far, has that last year that actually levy became aid, or how did that work when the transition levy? Is that now all transition levy, or did some of it become it became permanent transition levy, I think, is what happened last year.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Bernardi, the transition revenue is funded with an equalized levy. It's equalized at the same rate as the first tier of the referendum levy is equalized. There is a somewhat declining state share of that funding as property value grows across the state. But it was made permanent. It was originally scheduled to sunset, but that was changed to make mm-hmm. it a permanent revenue for districts.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Melcher.
I have a quick question. On this health and safety revenue, are these projects that Waseca has already completed and they're being reimbursed, is this after the fact or before the fact? Dr. Melcher?
Mr. Chairman, these are projects that Waseca completed between 1997 and 1999, and they never received the proper funding for them. And the issue came up as we were looking at their health and safety revenue for the current year, and the way that health and safety revenue is supposed to work, you look at the cumulative amount that they've spent over the years, and you compare that to the cumulative revenue, and we got into a disagreement as to whether these things were matched up, and that's where we discovered the error. So they have not received sufficient funding to offset the cost that they've already incurred, so it's basically created a hole in their general fund.
Okay. Any other questions right now? Commissioner Siegman.
Yep. Mr. Chair, and I thought we would just go through the bill rapidly. Some of the things, as I said, were covered in policy, mm-hmm. so we're not going to take up a lot of the committee's time on things that we probably thoroughly discussed, but there are things in here that you'd like to make sure that you review. Section 1 is the proposal by the governor to increase the advanced placement international baccalaureate programs in our state, and the appropriation, as I said, is for 7.3 in 07, and then it continues and increases in future years. In Section 2, you have the developmental screening aid, which we discussed the correction there for that. Section 4 is a teacher training program. This is a grant program to establish some potential programs for people that have already got a degree, mid-career people that would like to go into teaching. Section 5 is Teach for Minnesota, and this is a little bit different. This is for new college graduates that have a degree, have gotten a degree, who have an undergraduate major in the subject that we're looking at, and that would be science, math, English as a second language, if maybe they have foreign language instruction or interest in special ed, that they would be able to pass a skills examination. That's the basic skills examinations required for anybody to go into teaching, plus pass the Praxis 2 in the subject area that they're interested in, and have a cumulative grade point average of 3.0 or higher out of a 4.0 scale. And then show a district offer for employment in a high needs or hard to staff school. Those are some kind of qualifications for that. And it would be to offer, the Board of Teaching would actually request higher ed institutions to establish some programs, some teacher training programs for this particular profile, to see if we couldn't get more folks interested in some of the charted areas that we're facing.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Seeger, excuse me, Representative Grayling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, of course you know Section 4 didn't pass on the House floor yesterday, and then now we have Section 5 that partially refers back to Section 4. But I'm wondering about this Teach for Minnesota. It's not defined in here what a high-need school would be or a hard-to-staff school would be. Are you talking about rural schools? Are you talking about inner-city schools? And, you know, shouldn't it be defined somewhere in statute here?
Chair.
Commissioner Segrin.
Mr. Chair, that is actually an excellent point, Representative Bryan. We did intend for it to be, for example, rural schools that have trouble staffing, urban schools that may have hard to staff areas. We also were looking at the shortage areas of math, science, et cetera, special ed. So it could be any number of those things. We're certainly open to trying to define that if you wish. We just chose that those phrases to kind of try to be as flexible as we can, but you know, to also send the message that it is for those districts that are struggling to hire certain teachers.
Representative Graylin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, without Section 4, would this section even work?
Yes.
Commissioner Segrin?
Mr. Chair, yes. These are two different, entirely different programs. This program is focused on college graduates just coming out of school that have a bachelor's and have a major in a specific content area, if you look at that. And then if they want to be a teacher, they have to pass the beginning or the praxis test that is required for people entering the teaching profession, plus the praxis 2 in the subject area that they would like to teach, and have a cumulative grade point. And it's actually directing the Board of Teaching to ask higher institutions to submit program proposals for a program to get these potential candidates into a teaching program and ultimately to get their license. So they are two very different programs. The other one is more for like a mid-career person who has been out working for a number of years, somebody that's maybe worked at Medtronic or IBM and has a lot of skill in some science or math area but would like to switch careers. This one is actually for kind of newly minted college graduates.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Graylin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, I'm looking at page 8, line 8.34. It says a teacher training program must include the requirements under section 122A.245, subdivision 2, which isn't that what we're talking about on page 7, lines 7.9 to 7.26. That's what I meant by would this work without that new section.
Mr. Speaker.
Okay. Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Speaker.
Representative Brown, you are correct. There is a linkage there, which I did not realize. I'm not as familiar with this. But if we wanted to do the teach for Minnesota versus teach versus the other one, if that was some decision, we probably have to make sure that there was some criteria that would be added to this to link it back to this.
Thank you.
Mr. Segrin, you can continue.
Okay. Section 6, I'd like Mr. Melcher to come up actually and talk about. There are a number of sections in here that are just clarifying the QCOMP program. As this is a new program, there are some things that have to be just adjusted because of technical issues.
Mr. Chairman, Tom Melcher with the Department of Education. Section 6 would be linking the QCOMP formula allowance to the general education formula allowance beginning in fiscal 08, so that if the general education formula allowance was increased in fiscal 08 or in later years, the QCOMP allowance would increase by the same percentage factor. So it's currently at $260 per pupil. For example, if there was a 3% increase in 08 in the general ed formula allowance, the QCOMP 260 would also go up by the same 3% in order to maintain the same buying power in the program that it currently has. Yes, Section 7 of the bill is doing the same thing with regard to the portion of the QCOMP revenue that's set aside for the charter schools. It would increase the $3.3 million that is initially available to charter schools by the ratio of the current year formula allowance to the formula allowance for 2007. So again, that would be adjusted in proportion to the inflation in the general ed formula. And then Section 8 would be adding the Perpich Center for Arts Education and multi-district collaboratives, multi-district integration collaboratives, into eligibility for the QCOMP revenue, and that would be funded entirely from the state aid portion of the funding. There wouldn't be a levy, and the funding would be comparable to what the intermediate districts would receive under QCOMP.
Dr. Melcher, I think at this point.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Representative Segura.
Representative Latz has a bill addressing this one, and he wanted to speak to this piece, and he's not here at the moment, so as soon as he comes in, we will get him. He was here and left, and as soon as he comes back, we'll get him. But he wanted to talk to this. He has a bill, actually, on this.
Okay. Yeah,
so this seemed like the right time to hear from him.
Okay. That sounds good. When he comes back in, we'll have him speak to that part in Section 8. I think his bill, actually, on the agenda is, in principle, the same sort of thing. I do have a quick question, Dr. Melcher. Going back to Section 6, were we talking about the changing of the 260? That is a capped amount in total, I think. There's a total number of dollars that we cap that. Does that cap change as this ratio changes the dollars per school? Or what would happen there? We have a capped dollar amount. If each school is going up, what gives?
Mr. Chairman and members, that's addressed in Section 18 later in the bill. We could go to that. If you go to page 18 of the bill, you will see that the for fiscal 2008 and later, first of all, it's defining the aid and levy mix, and currently we have about $70 per student of levy and $190 of aid. And this is saying that when you increase the formula allowance, that all of the new money goes onto the aid side. So the levy stays approximately $70 per pupil, and the aid would go up proportionately. And then the new language on lines 18.17 and 18.18 would be increasing that $75 million in proportion to the increase in the formula allowance. So, for example, if there was a 3% increase in the formula allowance in 08, the $75 million would go up by 3% to cover the cost of that increase.
Very good. Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner
Seaman. Go back to Representative Grilling's question again on the Teach for Minnesota. Daniel Bittman is here. He staffs the Board of Teaching for us at the Department of Ed, and he also did say that the Teach for Minnesota could stand alone. We could strike the cross-reference because we also have what we call innovative programs through the Board of Teaching, so they could come in under the innovative programs portion of the Board of Teaching, whatever, and so this could go forward that way, and they could still review program proposals for getting newly minted college graduates into teaching. So we could attack it either way.
I'm going to keep going.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman,
Dr. Melcher.
Section 9 of the bill is a fairly technical change dealing with the payment of aid to charter schools. The language changes on page 11, line 27 and 28, and page 11, line 30, are substituting the current year aid payment percentage for, in one case we had 80%, 90%, and the other case we still had 80%. This reflects those changes we've had in the current aid percentage that we're paying out. And in general, throughout the statutes, we've gone to the term the current aid payment percentage, which is currently the 90% level. The new language on page 11, lines 32 through 34, is providing clarification of what happens when a charter school closes prior to or at the end of a school year, and this would allow the department to calculate an estimated final payment as soon as we have the audit of the pupil counts and the monitoring of any special education programs that we have and documentation of the lease expenditures. And also that we could make the final payment upon receipt of the audited financial statement. So that, in other words, we had the Colonel Young School, as an example, that closed in the fall last year. And the idea here would be as soon as we have all of the audited data for the school, we could go ahead and close off the books and pay the creditors and so forth rather than than waiting and having the money meter out throughout the rest of the year and into the following year. The new language on page 12, lines 18 through 20, would also clarify what happens to any money left over when a charter school closes. It essentially would say that any surplus money left over is returned to the state. Currently, it's not entirely clear what happens to any unspent funds. It becomes essentially up to the charter school board when they close. And since essentially the funding came from the state, we think it's only fair that the money would come back to the state if there was some excess funds left over. We have had two cases where charter schools have closed. And in one case, they did return the excess funds to the state. We weren't talking large amounts of money here. In the other case, I believe they initially wanted to give the money to another charter school and eventually ended up giving it to the school district where they were located. But we think that the appropriate thing to do would be to have one consistent policy. And since the charter school funding, by and large, has come from the state, for those surplus funds, if there are any, to come back to the state treasury.
Representative Klinzing, you have a question?
I'll do it at the very end.
Okay.
It's not
carry on.
Mr. Chairman, I remember Section 10 of the bill deals with the special education tuition billing, and page 13, lines 25 and 26 is a technical clarification, corrects a drafting error that was made in last year's bill. Also, page 13, line 3. There is a substantive policy change on page 14, lines 11 through 16. And this would exclude QComp revenue from the calculation of special ed tuition bills. So, for example, if the Minneapolis School District was receiving QComp revenue and there was a special ed student who was being educated in Columbia Heights, let's say, as an example, the current tuition billing language calls for the department to use the resident district's average amount of general education revenue per pupil unit. But since that QComp revenue is tied to a specific program in a specific building in Minneapolis, it doesn't make sense for that money to, kind of on a pro rata basis, flow out to Columbia Heights or whatever other district is providing that program. Instead, that should stay at the school that it was intended for. So this would exclude that QComp money from the calculation of the special ed tuition adjustments.
The next one is early learning. Thank you, Dr. Miller.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
If we could, Representative Sikora, would this be an okay time to have Representative Latz?
Yes, I think that's
he's got that look in his eye. He's ready to go. Let's do it. Sorry about that.
He's all
Representative Latz, your bill, I think, is essentially Section 18 of Representative Sikora's
Section
bill. Section 8 of Representative Sikora's bill. So we thought you could go through that if you'd like.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, members, and Chair Sikora. I want to note I have Nathan Davis and Pam Paulson with the Purpose Center are here as well to answer any questions that you might have about this. Essentially, Purpose Center is a high school, but when the QComp provisions came through the legislature in the past, they were not specifically included as eligible to apply for QComp dollars to improve the teacher performance by rewarding the compensation. We would like to make sure that they are eligible as well to apply in the pool for QComp dollars and all that would involve, hopefully, in earning to the benefit of all the students at the Purpose Center. So that's exactly what this provision does. It simply makes them eligible to apply with the other schools. If Nathan or Pam, if either of you would like to come up or make a comment or two.
Welcome to the committee. If you would, please state your name for the record and whoever wants to go first.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Nathan Davis, Executive Director at Purpose Center for Arts Education.
I'm Pam Paulson, Deputy Director of the Purpose Center for Arts Education.
Yeah.
Welcome.
And I'd like to let Deputy Director Paulson speak to this issue. She has been working on it from the start, so I'll let her make some comments.
Of course, our teachers would have to go through the same process that any other school district's teachers would in making the decision to want to voluntarily participate in this program. And, of course, we haven't gone that far yet because at this point they don't have the opportunity to make that decision because we're not included in the current legislation. And this would simply be an opportunity then for them to open the door for that discussion about whether they want to participate. I think that Dr. Davis and myself would like to see that happen, but that's not exactly our choice. One of the reasons that we think that it would be important for the teachers at the Perfect Center to have this opportunity is that the planning process is extremely valuable. In my opinion, as valuable or more valuable than the money that comes along with this particular legislation. It involves assessing student work, which the Perfect Center is dedicated to figuring out performance-based assessments for student work. It involves mentoring teachers. Again, that's a huge part of our mission, to make sure that we work on professional development of teachers. And it involves professional development in ways that is research-based and focused on ongoing professional growth of the teacher. Those are the things that our agency is dedicated to, and this fits perfectly. So you can see our interest in it, but again, it's a voluntary program for teachers, and we just want them to have the opportunity to make that decision.
Thank you, Ms. Paulson. Mr. Davis?
No, I really don't have anything to add. I think that the when this issue came up, it was extremely compelling, not only for the work in our own school, but I think it underscores what a comprehensive kind of place that we are, which is something that obviously this might not be the time or place to get into every aspect of that, but we are so much involved in trying to improve teachers' work around the state. And we're involved in so many programs that involve mentorship that it feels like that this program is a natural for us.
Well, okay. I assume that you're interested in this being available. Is there any ideas that it will go forward at the Perfect School, do you think?
We have introduced the idea to our teachers, but like with any school district, our teachers are in their own union and they have to make a decision to affirm this, but they're part of the SRSEA group, and they have had a representative from that union who's been very encouraging. I mean, I think that's one of the very positive things about this initiative, is it seems to have buy-in from many people from coming from different perspectives. So we're positive, but we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very good. Thank you. Representative Latz, anything else?
Mm-hmm. No, thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you.
And thanks to the governor for including this.
Thank you, Representative. I think we were...
Representative Sikora.
I believe we were at the point where we're due on Section 11.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Barbara O'Sullivan, Early Learning Services at Minnesota Department of Education, and I just want to talk briefly to the part about early intervention services for infants and toddlers with disability, birth through age 3. As Commissioner Segrin indicated, that Minnesota is being required by the Office of Special Education Programs, the U.S. Department of Education, to revise our regulations that we meet the intent of the federal law. And under IDEA 2004, infants and toddlers with a disability is an individual under 3 years of age who needs early intervention services because the child is experiencing developmental delay as measured by appropriate diagnostic instruments or has a diagnosed physical or mental condition that has a high probability of resulting in developmental delay. All the states have been required to submit a state performance plan. It's a 5-year plan, and to include a rigorous definition, that's the word that's used in the federal law, about children who will be eligible for these early intervention services. So looking at the impact of this law, we compared our information in terms of the outreach to children we serve with other states and national data. And the average for children receiving early intervention services is around 2.4%. Currently, Minnesota is reaching about 1.5% of these children. So we're projecting an additional 260 more infants and toddlers that we'll be serving in the next year. And I thought it might be helpful if I just gave a couple examples of children we might reach through changing this eligibility requirement. One is under current regulation, children who have a motor delay and are under 18 months can get services. But if they're over 18 months, they wouldn't be eligible under current law. They would have to show a delay in another area as well. Or if they had a diagnosed condition but had no evident delay. But with the information we have now about brain development and the medical information, that we could get services to these children sooner rather than a wait-and-see type of attitude. So Minnesota currently receives $6.8 million a year from the federal government for Part C services. Over $5 million is directed to local areas. And just to remind you, these early intervention services are include education, health, and human services at both the state level and local levels that we work together. So by doing this, we think we'll be able to reduce the educational costs to society by minimizing the needs for special education by reaching these children earlier, that they won't need it as they enter school. And most importantly, we'll be able to enhance the capacity of families to meet these children's needs. And it's just not Minnesota that, you know, the federal government's requiring this out. They're looking at other states as well. And the U.S. Government Accounting Office just released a report in December of 2005 addressing the issue of eligibility criteria as well.
Thank you, Ms. Sullivan. Representative Quinzing, you have a question?
Thank you, Chair Demmer. Seems like the intent of these monies this year would be $1 million to identify twice as many students as needing services as we currently do. It seems like the intent, as you stated in your summary, is to reduce education costs by reaching students earlier. Seeing as how this is looking like a $7 million appropriation in 08-09 compared to the $1 million this year, how much do you expect the special education costs to go down for the older children?
Mr. Chair, Representative Quinzing, I don't have the exact figures, but what we're looking at is that children that were, the additional children we're identifying by looking at changing the criteria, that we anticipate most of them may not need to be in special education when they transfer to what we call Part B of the program at 3 years of age, so that they might go to other things such as school readiness or Head Start or community preschool, and they wouldn't need continued special education services, so that the additional funds that we are requesting would not be carried over.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Quinzing.
Thank you. It sounds like you have some maybe some data you've been following to know that once these kids get early intervention, that they're completely dropped off of services for the rest of their school careers. I was wondering if you could share that with us. It doesn't have to be today, but.
Oh, okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Quincy, we can get back to you, but we are looking at other states who have a broader definition that we've used for the eligibility criteria and the experiences they've had.
Mr. Chair. Commissioner Segrin.
Mr. Chair, I just want to reiterate that this is something that the Federal Office of Special Education is requiring us to do. They have told us that we need to broaden our eligibility criteria. We had it more narrowly defined as per the special education disability categories, and they want us to broaden the definition to include the potential of students that would be developmentally delayed because of risk factors, such as perhaps a mother that maybe had been on drugs or something, and the child, you know, might have some exposure to, you know, some risk factors that might, you know, cause some developmental delay. So the Office of Special Ed has basically said we have to, there are five criteria that we have to use as their definition for this kind of broader child find process that we have to go through. And so the appropriation of 1 million this year, and then it, the estimate is to grow to 2.6 and then possibly 4.2. This is an estimate. I frankly think that we have been pretty already pretty open and aggressive about addressing children that really have needs, whether they're special ed or whether they just have some support needs in our current system. But this is an estimate, and the federal government says that we're not under any kind of quota. Ms. O'Sullivan quoted, you know, that we have about 1.5 or 6%. The national average is 2 point whatever. The feds at one point say we're not under any kind of quota, but then they look at our percentage and go, you know, are you really as aggressive as you can be in finding children? We think that we are pretty aggressive in trying to find children that need services. But again, this is sort of like one of those, we really don't have any choice. However, the children that we do identify, we will also get federal money for those children, too. So it's not just only a state appropriation. We will get federal money that will follow these kids, too.
Representative Clinton, you had a follow-up?
Yeah, thank you. Well, I definitely understand this is a federal request, and actually get the pleasure of sitting on the ICC, the Interagency Coordinating Council, that gets to sit down and talk about this definition and discuss it. But I do, you know, appreciate any evidence to back up identifying these kids, especially when we're using vocabulary like identifying kids with no evident delays and with the potential of having problems. I'd hate to, you know, put too many kids in a category that don't need to be there and end up with a self-fulfilling prophecy down the road. So, and then it's not a small expenditure into the out years, and that's why I kind of bring up some of these questions. So thank you.
For
Mr.
this question.
Chairman?
Oh, yes.
Oh, is there another question?
Yes,
I'm
Representative
sorry.
Dabney had okay. one. Do you want him to go? Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First question, Ms. O'Sullivan. How do these kids come to us? It sounds like our screening isn't finding these kids, or how are we screening to find them? And
Mr. Chair, Representative Dabney, these are, well, keep in mind these are infants and toddlers, so they don't get screened under our screening process. But the local areas, the IEICs, the Interagency Early Childhood Interagency Committees, representing health on human services, education, as well as other community organizations, agencies, do child find public awareness and outreach, and they work very closely. Of course, like who families interact with most are physicians and hospitals, and so those efforts will just be continued.
Representative Dabney?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Segrin, what if we don't do this?
I can answer that. Mr. Chair, Representative
Commissioner O'Sullivan.
Well, we get the allocation about $6.8 million a year from the federal government, and we've been told to do that in order to continue to receive Part C eligibility. So we would not receive the funds and not have Part C services under the federal law.
Thank you.
Representative Grayling, did you have a question?
Yes, I did. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking at page 14. Lines 14.27 to 14.29, and you had said, Commissioner Segrin or Ms. O'Sullivan, that we're doing this to conform with federal requirements or whatever. So I'm wondering, why are we striking, is that obsolete language, United States Code Title 20, Section 1401? And then my other question is,
if that's, you know, that might be a minute thing, but why are we putting the students who qualify under rule? You know, I long ago in my early days in the legislature had a lot to do with administrative rulemaking, and I feel very strongly that rules are to implement policy, but the legislature should set the policy. And I'm wondering, where is the policy that authorizes these Minnesota rules? And I don't see anything giving any direction. It's just wide open.
Mr. Chair.
Ms. O'Sullivan.
Representative Greiling. If we did eliminate the federal codes because they were outdated, but we have a whole chapter full of special education rules that this relate, statutes that this relates back to, including definitions under 125A.27. And so it is under the entire chapter of special education, chapter 125A, which is special education, early childhood intervention system, and academies for the deaf and blind, so that Part C services continue under there. The rule just looks at the detail and the specifics of how to determine the eligibility, you know, as far as, you know, how many standard deviations in the areas of development and that. And I did want, I'm not sure if I did say, this is kind of, but we are putting together a panel of experts and consulting with neonatologists to identify those conditions that are known to hinder so that we aren't, you know, including children that are going to be just fine.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bradley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. O'Sullivan, then where are the statutes that refers to? Because also stricken is section 125A.08, but there isn't anything replacing it.
Ms. O'Sullivan?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, did you say 125A.08? It's school district obligations?
Mr. Chair, Ms. O'Sullivan, on line 14.27, the statute that looked like it previously, it was the authorization for children who qualify for these services is being stricken, so but nothing is replacing it. It just...
Oh, I see.
Ms. O'Sullivan.
Respond. Under the Minnesota rules is that it's currently under the rule, but in looking at these children, they might not. Currently, children are qualified for special education services in FAPE, free and appropriate education, from birth to 21. These children may not need FAPE. They may be need more like a public health nurse visit or physical therapy. So we are holding a stakeholders group and going through the rulemaking process to sort out the eligibility.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Segrin.
Mr. Chair, I think what's confusing is that we've got kind of two things. We've got the special education requirements that clarify what a child is eligible for Part C under a disability category. That stays, that's always there. But then the federal government also has required us to have additional criteria for students that may be at risk of developmental delay, and we have to look at the identification and referrals. Where's the new language that talks about the new categories, like adaptive, etc.?
That would be Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm.
That would be under the federal law requires you to assess children in five areas of development: the adaptive, behavior, social emotional, communication, physical, and cognitive. And that refers back to what's in federal law that we have to meet as the intent. And then our intention was then to go through the rulemaking process in terms of determining, you know, in putting the eligibility criteria within there.
Mr. Chair, I may be saying it wrong, but I think in this Clause 6, it's trying to sort out that process of looking what we have to do now as far as the developmental delay portion and what we have existing for our criteria for, you know, that defines when you are eligible for special ed services. So we've got those very clearly defined already. That won't be a problem. It's these new criteria that we have to now put definition behind for our state, and that has to generate generate some rules.
Well, Representative Gradley?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't need to go on any more about it, but Commissioner Segrin, I would, you know, the way it is right now, to me, it gives way too much leeway to the department. It doesn't peg it into anything. When before we had a very specific federal citation and a state citation. So it doesn't sound like you're trying to pull a fast one and have limited services or expanded services compared to what the legislature might want. But I hope that before this goes any further, you can peg something in there, because the way it's worded right now, it looks like huge rulemaking authority for the department.
Mr. Chair?
Commissioner Segrin.
I think under special ed, we do have rulemaking authority for special ed. I think that is the area that we do have, unlimited rulemaking authority. So I don't think that's the issue, but I do agree with you. We'll try to get some clarification to tie it back to, you know, what we need to do, and we'll try to get some cross-references to do that. I have no problem with that at all.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Commissioner.
Representative Quinzen, you want to weigh in on this?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. It actually looks like the piece that's being stricken on 125A.08 deals with the school district's obligations in these situations, and kind of takes those which are spelled out in statute and moves them to Minnesota rules. And so I do think it is a big change from the way things have been done, and I too would like to kind of hear the rationale for why that should move from statute to rule.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Dimmer. And Ms. O'Sullivan, or Commissioner, could you also provide us with what the federal requirements are, as you were referring to them earlier, so that we know just exactly what is required in those seven clauses under Subdivision 3, Core Early Intervention Services?
Commissioner Seeker.
Mr. Chair, the new federal, or the requirements that we have to do under the kind of the new direction from the feds, it actually instructs us to define, tell how we want to define those. So we got these six categories, but we have to determine how we want to define them. And that's where I think the rule is.
Representative Erickson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Commissioner Segrin, there's nothing in federal law that will override.
I'm sorry.
There's nothing in federal law that will override what we choose.
Ms. O'Sullivan.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative, correct. I mean, what we're going to do, we're responding to the federal mandate to, you know, expand our eligibility criteria. So we'll reference back here to the federal regulations and what we're required to do. And I think that will clarify it. And then we can also add back in the statute numbers that correspond as well, and that way it'll be together.
Okay.
Representative, pardon me, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Sikora.
Representative Mariani also had the bill for high five. He's been waiting for quite a while. Sorry, I called you kind of early. But would you like to come forward now and talk about your high five program? And this happened to be his bill, but it ended up also in the governor's recommendations.
Welcome, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Members, if I could, this is going to refer to Section 17, I believe, in the bill. in Representative Secor's bill, Section 17 is where Representative Mariani's, I think, proposal lies. Representative Mariani.
Mr. Chair, members, House File 3257 is the restoring the pre-kindergarten program funding. And many of you know that, you know, there's really broad consensus in the state between all sorts of groups, particularly the business community and educators, about the importance of reaching all students, but targeting particular students with high risk factors, if you will, as early as possible in terms of orientation for academic preparation in order to get better success. And one of the proven ways in which our state's been able to do that over the last few years through 12 programs scattered around the state, representative geographically of rural, suburban, and metro areas are these pre-kindergarten programs. I'm pleased to say that there seems to be very strong bipartisan support for this kind of effort. Many of you know that the governor and I don't always agree on many things, but we certainly do agree on this particular approach and appropriating for these programs. The governor had recommended appropriations for the pre-kindergarten program in the last year. He stepped forward again in his proposals this year to fund these programs. And so the governor and the Department of Ed, I think, are very wisely understanding the importance of these kind of efforts. It's important to know that these programs are genuine academic preparation programs. They're not just, you know, babysitting programs for four-year-olds. I mean, there's rigor here, there's structure, there's good guidance in these programs for four-year-olds. And really, I think there's no doubt in the minds of many of us that but for these programs, many of these students would be embarking their elementary years at a disadvantage vis-a-vis many of their colleagues in kindergarten, first and second grade. I think you guys have already talked about some of the funding mechanisms here in an earlier amendment. This proposal basically will make this revenue permanent for these programs. It essentially grandfathers these 12 programs in. The governor's proposal is actually more generous than the bill that I have before you, because the governor had proposed to, or is proposing to start with that funding in that using the transitional revenue in aid and getting it into a permanent funding status starting in 06. This bill would do that in 07. And again, I think what's very important for these 12 districts is that, in fact, there is a permanent revenue source and structure for them. I can't speak to all the other districts, but I know in St. Paul alone we have 600 students in the four-year-old slots, and we've already begun to recruit for these students this spring. I have with me Ms. Marianne Heinrichs, and I understand, you know, we're short on time, but I think it's really important just to hear very briefly from Ms. Heinrichs. She's done the research and evaluation and assessment for this program, and I'm told it's the first longitudinal local study here in Minnesota on four-year-old programs. In the past, we've always referenced studies from other states. And I think she's got some important things to share with you about some of the strong positive results behind this program in terms of helping to close the achievement gap and achieving more proficiency with students who, compared to their colleagues who are similar background, arrive at a much higher proficiency level earlier. And so with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Heinrichs for a few words.
Ms. Heinrichs, welcome to the committee. Could you please state your entire name for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Dr. Marianne Heinrichs, and I'm a program evaluator with St. Paul Public Schools. I'm here to answer the question, what does the data show? And do the data show an impact of the St. Paul Public Schools community kindergarten programs? Here's the work to date. I'm going to try to do in 3 minutes what I normally do in about 3 hours, okay? In our four-year-old class, classrooms. The teachers use an assessment called work sampling. These are 40 indicators, socialization, language and literacy, mathematics, and physical development, totally mapped on the Minnesota State standards for four-year-olds. And teachers rate our children as either not yet or in process or proficient on these indicators. Now, at the end of the year, we're finding that 95% of these children are assessed to be either proficient or in process in all of these indicators. Actually, about 66% are completely proficient. But the really neat finding here is that there were no differences in proficiency across racial groups. I'm talking about 4 years of our data from 2000 to 2004. I've got 1,500 children here that we're looking at. Okay, so what happens when they get to kindergarten? It was in the fall of 2004 that the state, they did a statewide study on school readiness, looking at how prepared our children were in kindergarten. I was able to get a hold of the St. Paul data, 17 schools, really well represented, and then was able to identify in all these children, close to 900 children, how many of these children attended our programs. So I was able to identify, here's the children that attended our four-year-old community K programs, and here's the children for whom I have no known preschool history. In other words, children like yours and mine, and friend, neighbor, you know, the whole gamut. So unknown history versus a known history. What I found was that these children were rated by their kindergarten teachers as just as ready on, again, the work sampling standards. But our children coming from the community kindergarten had much higher risk factors. They were much more likely to be free and reduced lunch eligible, lower family income, lower parent education, more likely to not use English at home, and were children from the minority community. I was able to take these children, actually match them on all these factors. So now I've got two sets of children that are matched on all these factors I just said. At this point, the group that had the community kindergarten history were scored by the kindergarten teachers as more proficient on the indicators, okay, more ready for school. So are these programs actually able to reduce the achievement gap? That's really the question that we're looking at. So the next work is in progress, and now we're looking at another group of kids. So we're looking at children that have now attended community kindergarten 2001-02 and see what happens in grade 2. In St. Paul, we start giving the SAT-10s, that standardized, nationally normed achievement test in grade 2. And I identified in all our children in who I have the SAT-10 information for, identified who these children were that attended our community kindergarten programs, and found what I was looking at to see what was their achievement. I don't want to lose you, but the SAT-10 is scored on the basis of stay nines. So your child, if they're 1 to 3 stay nines, that's not good. If they're 4 to 9, it is good. 1 to 3, not good. 4 to 9, good. And so it's just looking at that comparison. Who were those kids that scored within that good achievement, that acceptable achievement, and found that our community kindergarten kids, those kids with that experience versus kids for whom I didn't know what kind of preschool experience they had, they scored equal. Okay, but then I took a look at, again, the demographics. And what am I finding? Again, there's a difference. Our kids that went to community kindergarten were more likely to be eligible for free and reduced lunch, spoke a second language at home, they were not Caucasian. These are the higher risk factors. Now, you know that when we're looking at our kids in any of our standardized tests in St. Paul, our kids in these higher risk groups do not score as high. Well, here we're beginning to see a trend. Now, obviously, there's a lot of analysis. That's the work to date. And so, like a good mystery novel, we're beginning to see what the end is. But I think this shows a really good trend. When I'm saying that, Mr. Chair, but when I say that there is a difference, I am talking about differences with a statistical test.
Thank you, Ms. Hendricks. Representative Mariani, closing remarks?
Mr. Chair, I thought we're joined by Ms. Annie, is it Pearson?
Yep.
From Minneapolis Schools.
Okay, my name is Annie Pearson. I'm going to talk really quickly. I have taught preschool and kindergarten in the Minneapolis schools for over 25 years. I've had opportunities to experience the power of quality preschool and impacting children's lives, and I'm here today to talk to you because I am passionate about increasing opportunities for more children. High Five is a successful and high-demand program. High Five grads consistently outperform district averages on the beginning of kindergarten tests. An initial early analysis of data indicates that that continues as they advance. We've got one cohort that we followed through the third grade MCAs, and that pattern is continuing. High-quality, well-trained teachers in the developmentally appropriate program make a difference. Popularity is evident. This year we had 300 slots for students. We had 1,100 people apply. And that was without telling anybody. That was just having people tell neighbors and friends. And screeners are begging for more and more slots. You've seen all the articles and you've seen the research on the value of early childhood education. I just want to share some personal stories because what I do is teach children. So what I want to share with you are some of their stories. I want you to meet my friend Travell. I brought his photo here for you today because Travell came to school one day about an hour and 15 minutes into our 2.5-hour day. I thanked his mom for bringing him, and she said, well, I have to get him here because school is important and Travell is smart. When his brother was in school, he was in trouble all the time and he wasn't learning, but Travell is smart. So she took two buses to get him to school. Travell is in first grade now. Last year in kindergarten, his mom moved three times. Each time she came with a map showing the address of the apartment and making sure that he could stay at his same school. He got a perfect attendance award last year, and he passed the kindergarten assessment at the end with more, you know, scoring higher than he needed to. I want you to meet, I got out of order here. I want
Pearson,
you to
I see
meet.
You have a good group there. We're not going to be able to look at all of them.
No. I just wanted to have you meet Jonathan. He's probably the one that I want to talk about a little bit with you. Jonathan came to school with his cousin Katya, and neither family spoke any English. The first time we needed to do a conference with Katya's family, I chased them down the hall saying, please, 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 I can get an interpreter. It isn't scary. They started attending conferences. They came to school events. When it came time for Jonathan to go to school, they had their school choice card in time and got him enrolled. The first conference, I didn't have to chase him anywhere. Jonathan's mom and dad and an uncle came to talk with me, and they said it's important we're here because Jonathan can be anything. Jonathan is learning the things that he needs to do to be anything. Jonathan is now in a gifted and talented program in first grade. His parents have been at every conference. His dad has learned to read English by reading with Jonathan the English-Spanish books that we've been sending home. And now Jonathan's little brother, Omar, is the age to go to High Five. I had to leave the school because of the cuts in funding. They found my address from former teaching mates. They found my address and delivered his card to me at my house. I said they didn't need to do that. They could submit it to the school. They said, no, you could maybe make sure that he gets the same chance Jonathan got. So I'm here to ask you to give Omar the same chance that Jonathan got. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Pearson, and thank you for the work that you're doing with the kids. It sounds great. Representative Mariani? Oh, I'm sorry. Representative Biskins, you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Chairman, Dr. Heinrich? I'm wondering why on bullet three of your handout, there wasn't a more straightforward analysis of student achievement. Why, on our first check mark, we're comparing those students who have attended at least 5 months of the program to all students in grade two. In other words, we're throwing these students back into the comparative group, if I read that correctly, and why wasn't there not just a straight-out statistical analysis done between those who had the service in grade four and those who did not have the service in grade four?
Ms.
Heinrich? I'm sorry.
Oh, thank you. Mr. Chair, Representative, what I was looking at is children who attended perhaps 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and had to decide at what point would I make a cutoff. At what point could I say that there was an adequate dosage of the four-year-old program? And it really is almost arbitrary. Like I say, it is really a work in progress, and so some of these things still have to be worked out. But I decided, looking at the data, that if they had been there for 5 months, which is approximately one semester, it was like the amount from January to June, to May, sorry, or it might be a late entry. But if students had simply attended from September and October, November, I decided that it likely wasn't enough to make an impact. It's a good question. It's one of those things that you need to call when you're doing the research.
Representative Biskens.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. But Dr. Heinrich, I guess my real question is, why weren't you using a control group, group of students who had, in making a comparative analysis, you typically use a control group. Why was that not used in this analysis?
Mr. Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. It's it really is a quasi-experimental design. It's not a randomized design. And it's I don't really have the opportunity to do a randomized design. We really don't have the kind of funding to do that kind of research. I basically have to use the data that we have. And there really isn't a research study involved here. It's simply attempting to see by using archival data. I would say that there is a lot of evidence to show that a quasi-experimental design has a lot of power and may in fact tell us as much, if not more, than randomized design. That would be a debate that we could take up at some point.
Representative Sikora.
Mr. Chairman, there was one more section that someone wanted to speak to, and that is Section 21 on the intensive English grants for adult refugees. And can we take one or two more minutes? Thank you so much.
Representative Sikora, your motion on this bill was to lay it over for possible inclusion,
right?
Isn't that right?
Right.
Well, here's the choice. We do have two or three people that have indicated they'd like to say something. We can either try to squeeze a couple in, or we can just lay it over, and if it does come back, we can deal with it at that time. Representative Sikora, I guess I can leave it to you. I don't know if anybody else needs this room. We've got a few more minutes. We're basically at the end of our time. But
well, I guess we won't have time for any of them then, because I was just informed that there's a couple more technical things that have to be discussed in this bill. So let's take those.
Okay, you want to do those
and then,
now?
And because I'd like to be finished with the bill today, so we'll lay it over.
Well, if we're laying it over, that means people will have an opportunity to, for possible inclusion, people will have an opportunity to testify if it comes back in the omnibus.
Right.
And I think in the interest of time, if you can finish your presentation, Commissioner Segrin, then we'll, I guess I'm getting the nod back here. We've got to vacate the room. So
we've got to get out of here pretty fast. I think the next, is there still a committee coming in here? Okay.
Dr. Melcher?
Mr. Chairman and members, Tom Melcher from the Department of Education. Section 16, page 16 of the bill, would be excluding the QCOMP revenue that a school district receives from the calculation of special education excess cost aid. Currently, if you qualify for QCOMP revenue, you get a reduction in your excess cost aid for special ed, and we didn't think that made sense. So that would eliminate that penalty. Section 18 we've talked about. Section 19 I'm sorry. Yeah, Section 19 of the bill is just a technical thing that is clarifying that if we have an aid program that's been discontinued and we have an error that's determined in that program, that the department has authority to use the general education account to either recover the aid into or make aid payments to other school districts. Section 20 is dealing with the alternative teacher compensation program. We had five school districts in the older alternative teacher compensation program. They were limited to 2 years of additional participation in the old program if they weren't ready to transition into QCOMP. The governor has recommended that they be given another 2 years. So that would carry us through fiscal 09. So for those five districts, which includes a portion of Minneapolis, they would be allowed to continue to receive $150 per pupil for 08 and 09 if they didn't elect to go fully into the QCOMP program right away in 08. And the next one is the
The next one, Mr. Chair,
Mr. Segrin,
is what I had already talked about, the $1 million grants for refugees Section 22 is a Chinese language program that the governor is proposing to institute. It would start to establish some teaching of Chinese and also establish some cultural programs and understanding. Section 23 is the high school redesign pilot project program we already talked about for $5 million a year for 10 years, and then the rest is the appropriation. And that is the end of the bill.
Thank you, Commissioner Segrin. Representative Sikora, any further comments? Do you want to renew your motion?
Since it's end of our time, in addition to end of the bill, Mr. Chairman, I would like to renew my motion that this be 3580 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay. Representative Sikora renews her motion that House File 3580, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Any further? Okay. So moved.
Thank you.
Meeting's adjourned.